To close the show today, we're going to hear from one of our listeners about a movie that changed his life.
I'm Brian Sloan, and I listen to Studio 360 on WNYC. I grew up in the 70s, and on television at that point, the only gay people you saw were kind of exaggerated, silly.
Excuse me, girls.
Extremely, like, effeminate.
Yes, I'm Farley Wainwright, interior decorator. Mr. Martin, I've come to capture you.
And then, like, in the 80s, AIDS was starting to become, you know, this epidemic, and that was reflected in films. You know, and some of those films are quite good, but again, the context is that these characters are sick and they're dying.
What's wrong with him?
I'm sure you've heard of acquired immune deficiency syndrome.
Are you telling me I have AIDS?
So, you know, it was sort of this weird extreme. Either being gay meant you were just a big joke, or it meant that you were going to die, essentially. There was no kind of like in between, and there was no romance involved with gay characters ever. I was a junior at Boston College, and I was taking my very first film class, and that's when I read about Morris. It was a film by Merchant Ivory, who I'd heard about. They had made Room with a View. And I remember the headline of the article, too, which said, a gay love story, with love story in quotes. And I was kind of like, oh, this is interesting. Like, what's a gay love story? The summer right before that, I had had my first kind of big love. I was working at a summer job, and we had this, you know, very intense first love sort of relationship. But it ended because he did not feel... I remember he said, you know, I just don't think I'm ready for this kind of relationship, meaning he was not really ready to be honest about being gay. So I had read about Morris in the Times Art and Leisure section, and I actually skipped class. It was a Monday afternoon, and I bought my ticket and I saw it by myself. The film is set in the early 1900s, and it's about Morris Hall, who goes to university and meets an older, kind of much more intellectual student, Clive Durham.
You're living in college now?
Beginning my second year.
I'm third. I have seen you, though. Hall, isn't it?
And they develop this very intense friendship, which sort of becomes romantic, and they fall in love with each other.
Understand what?
That I love you.
Don't talk rubbish.
But as the relationship intensifies, it becomes difficult for Clive. He can't continue in the relationship because he realizes he's sort of to the manor born. He has responsibilities, and he's not going to throw that away.
By continuing like this, you and I are risking everything we have. Our careers, our families, our names.
Balls. I don't give a damn about name. What sort of a life would I have without you? We love each other. I know it.
For God's sake, Morris, hold your tongue for a moment. If I were in love with anyone now, then it would be with some nice girl.
So Morris is kind of left on his own. He's trying to figure out what to do with this information about himself. He knows that he can't really, like, hide it. But at the same time, he knows it's very difficult to live openly, given the time period that he's living in.
What an ending. What an ending.
Morris?
What's going to happen to me? It's done for.
But then this kind of miraculous thing happens. He meets the gameskeeper at Clive's estate, and they end up having this very, you know, romantic love affair, essentially, which is, of course, completely secret and totally forbidden, which makes it even better. And it ends up making Morris able to accept himself by loving this other man. And he says, I shan't ever leave you.
Now we shan't never be parted. It's finished.
And I was just like, whoa, like, this is not how these stories usually end.
Will that be all, sir?
Yes. Thank you, Simcox.
Good night, sir. Good night.
And then, you know, after that, it cuts back to Clive in his country estate, staring out the window, and his wife is kind of like, you know, come back to bed sort of thing. And he just has this look on his face where, you know, he's kind of stuck in this life of lies, essentially. And you really get this sense, like, this character is having the bad ending. When I saw this film, it awakened within me sort of what I wanted to say as an artist. And that was essentially that, you know, there need to be more gay love stories. Now I'm a writer, producer, and director working in independent films. What I've been interested in is trying to bring gay characters into the film and television world, making, you know, the gayness of a character really like a secondary consideration. It's more trying to tell real stories about real people who happen to be gay. My first feature was called I Think I Do, and it's a screwball comedy about a gay couple attending a straight couple's wedding. And while they're there, they decide they want to get married too.
Yeah, we've only been going out for a year.
Actually, a year and 18 weeks.
That's like a world record for you, I think.
Come on, I'm trying to be serious here.
We have to talk about this now.
Come on,
honey, I gotta run.
Okay.
And it becomes a very wacky weekend of misunderstandings and miscommunications and romance, too.
If you're not ready to get serious and make a real, honest commitment to this, then fine. But I'm reaching a point in my life where I want someone...
I accept.
Really?
As a filmmaker, you want to make the movies that you want to see. And that's what I do.
Brian Sloan is a filmmaker who lives in New York City. Studio 360's Jenny Lawton produced our story with help from Elena Kaczynski. Is there some movie or book or any other work of art or entertainment that changed your life once upon a time? Tell us about it at studio360.org, and we might put your story on the air.